Hi there, this is Darren Spoo, pastor at First Baptist Church in Tulsa, and welcome to our weekly message podcast. We would invite you to join us in person Sunday morning at 8:30 and 11 o'clock in downtown Tulsa, or check out our webpage at tulsafbc.org. God bless you, and have a great week. So I'm going to ask you to turn with me to the book of Ruth. I think it's the eighth book in the Bible, if I'm counting them off right. It's right there to the front, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth. And we're only going to be in Ruth for just a couple of minutes. I'm going to use it as a launching pad to go to a New Testament scripture, but it's very important. I think here is a case study of how not only to deal with the loneliness we feel, but also to address the loneliness that is plaguing our culture. So this is Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. It says this, "In the days when the judges ruled," so let's stop right there. Boy, we didn't get far. It's going to be a long morning. "In the day when the judges ruled," what are we talking about there? In fact, you might look over on the opposite page and it has the book of Judges there. Well, the era of the judges covers about a 200 or 250 year period of time. And just to get a feel for this, our country is about to turn 250 years old, okay? So that's kind of gives you the feeling of the era of the judges. The judges went from the death of Joshua to the first king, King Saul. And it was 250 years. And here's the refrain of the book of Judges. "Everyone did what was right in their own eyes." Okay. And so it was a period of chaos. It was a period of confusion. There was moral uncertainty. By the way, one of the worst pieces of advice anybody can ever give you is follow your heart. Okay. Because your heart is not a reliable source of what's right or wrong or good or best. But that kind of was the tone of that era, was everyone just kind of followed their heart. They did what was best in their own eyes. And if you ever read the book of Judges, it was just a mess. So here in the middle of this era seems to be another case study of life going sideways. "In the day when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land." That's bad. "So a man from Bethlehem," same town that Jesus would be born in 1,200 years later, "together with his wife and two sons, went for a while to live in the country of Moab." So don't think that this is just about moving, okay? If I were to say, "Hey, I want to move to Texas," everyone would celebrate, you know. Or if I say, "Hey, I want to move to Arkansas," you would say, "Why? Why do you want to do such a—" It's not just a matter of physical location. Moving was a matter— did somebody just hiss at me when I mentioned Arkansas? It's a matter of loyalty. It's more like when Kevin Durant left the Oklahoma City Thunder to go play for the Golden State Warriors. He was branded a traitor by those in Oklahoma, right? Well, he just changed teams. No, he changed teams, okay? There's a lack of loyalty. Moving in the ancient world, especially moving out of the Holy Land, was this is the land God has promised us. We are his people under his protection. If you move somewhere else, that's a sign that maybe your relationship with God isn't quite right. So this family was beginning to move. Verse 2, we find out this man's name, Elimelech. His wife's name, Naomi. And the names of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Okay, so we see the main players there. You've got a family of four, led by Elimelech and his wife, Naomi. Now, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And kind of the subtext here is, but at least she had her two sons. Well, they married Moabite women, Orpah and the other named Ruth, after which this book is named. After they had lived there about 10 years, get what happens here, Mahlon and Chilion also died. And so Naomi here, in a matter of five verses, has lost her husband and both of her sons. When Naomi heard in Moab that God, that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food, in other words, the famine had lifted, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. The last living Civil War widow. There was a man by the name of James Bolin who fought in the Missouri Cavalry during the Civil War. In 1936, he was 92 years old, and he took a bride. His 17-year-old housekeeper named Helen Jackson. Now, we hear that and it seems a little bit, you know, something weird is going on there. But what really happened is James Boland, 92 years old, Civil War veteran, he married his housekeeper because it was during the Great Depression. She had nothing whatsoever. And so they married as a business arrangement so that when he died, which he did just a few months later, she could receive his pension. So Helen Jackson, the last living Civil War widow, died in 2020. How about that? Isn't that cool? It's really interesting that she had something for her whole life that someone had provided for her. Well, that was not the case here. In this situation, Naomi, Ruth, Orpah had nothing. No support whatsoever. But they heard things were getting better back in Bethlehem. So Naomi, since that's her hometown, she goes back. Now realize, for Ruth and Orpah, they had never been there before. They were Moabites. That was their land. So what happens here is rather interesting. In fact, you can read this. I'll point out a few verses here. As they're walking back, Naomi dismisses her daughter-in-laws three times. In fact, in verse 8, she says, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home." Then again in verse 11, "Return home, my daughters." And then again in verse 12, "Return home, my daughters." Three times. Now, in the ancient world, if you said something thrice, which it's been a long time since I've used the word thrice, but it just feels right to use it this morning. You say something not once, not twice, not three times. In fact, still in the Middle Eastern world today, if a man says to his wife three times, "I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you," you're divorced. And so this was really the canceling of a contract, the canceling of a social obligation. Go back, return, return. These two ladies were free. Orpah did just that. It says in verse 14, she wept aloud. She kissed her mother-in-law and returned back home. I think it's good to note, and it's healthy to note, that there are going to be some people in your life who are going to come and go. They're going to be seasonal friends, seasonal acquaintances, people that pass through your life. In fact, it's been a long time since I've been in London, but I understand about 10 years ago, they started phasing out that recorded voice that says, "Mind the gap." That's what the London Underground is known for, "Mind the gap." And so they began to phase out that particular recording, not knowing that it was recorded by a man in the 60s who had died in the 90s, and his widow would go every day to the embankment station in the London Underground to listen to her husband's voice yet again saying, "Mind the gap." So they began to phase this out all over London, except the only place you can hear it today, the London Underground, has kept it playing at the embankment stop in the London Underground, "Mind the gap," so a wife, a widow, could go and hear the voice of her husband one more time. Some of our relationships are like that. We're on a subway traveling with people, and people will step off, right? They'll come into our lives and they'll leave our lives. That's okay. But Ruth is different. It says, whereas Orpah wept aloud and kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, Ruth clung to her. Do you have people in your life, boy, this doesn't sound good, who cling to you? I mean that in a positive way. Y'all didn't laugh nearly as much of that as I got a kick out of that. Yeah, I've got some people clinging onto my life. There are some people, though, who we cling to, that whatever happens, thick or thin, good or ill, we are with them all the way. That's the kind of person Ruth was. She was a person of adventuresome faith and incredible commitment. And here's the quintessential verse. Verse 16, we often hear this at weddings, but actually it's more of a family commitment. Ruth replied, "Do not urge me to leave you." The contract's already been canceled. This is not about a contract. "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people are my people. Your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely." The curse she gives there literally means all the bad that's happened, may it happen again if I don't stay true to you. So in all of our talk about loneliness here the last few weeks, as we've gone through this teaching series, it's been very defensive in posture. Here's how you defend yourself against this kind of loneliness and that kind of loneliness and this flavor of loneliness. Today, we're turning it around. Today, instead of being on the defensive against loneliness, I want us to go on the offense against loneliness. Not only in dealing with loneliness in your life, but in dealing with the loneliness in the lives of other people around us. How do we become people that can say what Ruth says? And by the way, I've said it once, I'll say it again. Loneliness is a plague of our time that's giving rise to all kinds of mental illness, all kinds of conspiracy theories, all kinds of issues in our society, anger chief among them. As Christians, we need to be thinking, oh, the world sure has gotten a bad place. No. We say, how can I serve right here, right now? How do we become the kind of people that cling to others like Ruth? So here's where I want you to go to the New Testament with me. Would you go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5? And this is all about now how to go on the offensive against loneliness as it is in the world around us, as it is a plague in our culture. How do we go on the offensive? And just for your convenience, in case you don't want to turn to 1 Thessalonians 5 or you don't know where it is in the Bible, that's okay too. Here it is. And what I want you to notice here are five verbs. One of them is for me. The last four are for you. We urge you. And that's my verb. Here in just a minute, I'm going to urge you. But here's what I want to urge you to do. Warn those who are idle and disruptive. Encourage the disheartened. Help the weak. Be patient with everyone. So let me do my part here. My job this morning, as we've talked about Ruth, is kind of a little case study. Now we're getting into the practical application of this. My job is to urge you. Marianella Beretta lived in Lake Como, Italy. Beautiful place to live. And she had made arrangements as kind of like a reverse mortgage deal. She could live in her house until she passed away, and then a real estate developer would own her property afterwards. So she had made all these arrangements. End of life was all taken care of. A crew was called out to her house in 2020 because a tree had fallen in her front yard and had stayed down for a long time. And they noticed not only was a tree down, but there was mail and there was newspapers all around. When the crews went inside, they found Marianella Beretta sitting at her kitchen table, where she had been deceased for 2 years. 2 years. No family ever came forward, and none of the neighbors in the neighborhood had missed her. She literally had no one in her life. Now we all gasp, you know, because we say it's a tragedy to die alone. What's even worse is it's a tragedy to live alone. And there are a lot of people right now. Listen, if we're looking for opportunities to serve, you don't have to look very far. There are a lot of people right now who are so very lonely. So I, as your pastor, urge you, just as Paul urged the Thessalonians. Here's what we need to do. Four things. Warn those who are idle and disruptive. Some of you like that. Oh yeah, I want to be the sheriff. I want to find the people that are doing wrong. Well, maybe this has a little bit different flavor. It's not a come down hard on you warning. It is a, isn't there a better way to live? So, a friend of mine who's a college professor made an observation that 10 years ago when she started teaching, before she'd open her classroom doors, all the students would be out in the hall just talking, a huge cacophony of noise. They were all talking, it was loud, and I opened the door and they all flooded in, they were all talking. She says, today before I open my door out in the hallway, I open the door and it's completely silent. It's still full of students, but what are they doing? I wonder when we die if we'll say, I wish I had had more screen time. I don't think so. Look around. It's called the heads down tribe. We're all looking down. Where God called us to live is not right here. In fact, I was listening to a book yesterday. The author was taking a tour of Graceland, and he was in the jungle room, Elvis's jungle room, How many of you have been there before in the jungle room? That's not something to be proud of. I just wanted to shame a few of you in church today. But people are in the jungle room, and you're given this iPad to look as you go. And one man turns to his wife and goes, look, you can swipe right and see on this side of the room. You can swipe left and see on this side of the room. And he goes, you're in the room. You don't need an iPad to see the jungle room. You're here. And the person just kind of had this quizzical look on their face and went back to swiping. Yeah. I want to warn us, and I am not against social media and screens. I use them quite a bit, but life is lived here. This right here, it might feel good for a moment, but it's not the connection we truly crave. I've got to throw one more in here on this. A friend of mine emailed me early this morning and was opening up a chat feature on Facebook and noticed that you can actually chat now with artificial intelligence individuals. There's like the friendly grandfather. You can chat with a friendly, it's all AI generated. One was the funky dog mom. I don't know what that's about. But these are artificially intelligence generated people that you can start chatting with. But what about chatting with real people? I want to warn us. We need to start looking at relationships, real people, as the most important thing. So here's what I want to urge us to do, okay? Warn those who are idle. Say, get off here. Start looking out here. Let's encourage one another to be engaged with one another. Warn those who are idle and disruptive. Encourage the disheartened. So if you're lonely, here's one thing that you can do to practically begin to address your loneliness in your life. Become an encourager to others. People love to be around those who are encouraging. Had you raised your hands a minute ago, I promise not to make fun of you this time. How many of you love to complain? You better all raise your hand. I've been in this church long enough. Yeah, we all love to complain. There's something cathartic about it, right? But what we really need is to encourage others. And if you become a person of constant encouragement, what you're going to find is people are going to want to be around you. They're going to start relying on you. In fact, take the word encourage. What's that middle word there? Courage. You give people strength. And we want to be around people who feed the deepest part of our souls. So I want to urge you, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage one another as you look each other in the eye, feed each other's souls. Then it says, help the weak. So it was right at a year ago. In fact, it was a year ago this last week. I take a retreat 4 times a year to a monastery, do a solitude retreat. And last year about this time, I was having all kinds of back trouble. And while I was at the monastery by myself, I bent over to put on my sock to go for an afternoon walk, and a disc in my back ruptured. If you've ever had that happen, it's one of those painful things you can experience. It's right up there with giving birth. I mean, I don't know what women complain about, but I'm going to experience pain after this service is what's going to happen. It was painful, okay? I fall over on the bed. I literally cannot move. That's all I can do is just to flop over on the bed. I reach for my phone. I text my wife. I say, don't panic, but I can't move. Those two phrases typically don't go together. And my wife had to bring our son out to Clear Creek Monastery, an hour outside of Tulsa, collect me. And when you have to use your rolling suitcase as a walker, you're in a bad place. That was the first time in my life that I was absolutely helpless. Listen, many people feel that emotionally right now. They've got nothing to give, and they need somebody to help them. Would you pray that God would help you recognize those people? And I don't mean those people, like pointing at them, that He would help you identify who they are and to help. That's what we are called to do. Warn, encourage, help. Here's one more verb, and then we're going to get to some grassroots application. Be patient with everyone. And I don't normally use Greek words in my teaching, but this is a pretty good one. So that word for patience is makrothumion. Macro means big. Thumion is where we get our English word thermometer. Some people, you're going to need a long thermometer with them. You know what I'm talking about. Some people are going to require more patience than others. Here's another way of saying it that I often say it this way. Love them anyway. In fact, some of the most hurting people I've dealt with, when they've taken it on me, I've even told them face to face, I said, you can say to me whatever you want to say, you can do whatever you want to do, but I'm going to love you anyway. Almost like getting even with them, isn't it? But it's getting even in a way that Christ commanded us to do. I'm going to love you anyway. Can you stop and think for just a moment that maybe the most hurtful people in your life are the people that are hurting the most? The most hurtful people and hateful people toward you may be the people who are actually hurting the most. Love them anyway. So here's some practical application. It's nice to look at these verbs and say, okay, we need just to be attentive to others, warn, encourage, help, be patient. Let me give you two very practical applications of this today. First is something everyone can do. Every 4 months, we put out a new 4x4 card. I'm encouraging you, and as your pastor, I'm calling you, all of us, to pray for people in our life who don't know Christ, who are lonely because they don't know the Lord. A family member, a coworker, a neighbor, a friend, these are out here on the console, they're in all the window ledges. I would ask you to pick one of these up, and if nothing else, here's what this card will serve to do. It will get your eyes off of you, because a lot of our loneliness is because of self-focus. And we start seeing other people on the horizon and other people in our lives that we need to be praying for and pray for them every day. Put this someplace where you'll remember it, where you'll see it. Pray for them, focus on them, reach out to them. The people that you put on this card might be some of the loneliest people in the world because they don't know their Creator and Savior. That's something all of us can do. Here's something some of us can do. And some of you, this is about to ring your bell. For some of you, this is not. But I want to announce this morning a new initiative that our church is taking into lay counseling ministry. So we've been in discussions about this for almost a year now. I pulled together several months ago a group of all the licensed counselors in our church. Was put in touch with a church from Scottsdale, Arizona that's doing a great job in counseling ministry. Got together all of these licensed professionals, and I heard two things from the licensed counselors in this church in our area. Number one, the system is overloaded. There are so many people with mental health care issues that need somebody to talk to, and sometimes it's difficult just to get in to see somebody. The system is overloaded. Second, counseling is expensive, and for some people who don't have insurance especially, it is cost prohibitive. So what can the church do in a situation where the system is overloaded, where it's expensive? What can we do practically to serve? And here's where I'm going to use the word a third time. Mental health has become a plague in our modern culture. And I don't use that phrase lightly. Go back to the Middle Ages when the Black Death was going through Europe. You know what would happen? Let's say the plague moved into Rome. You know where non-Christians would go? They would head for the hills. They would go, it's no longer safe to be in the city. I'm going to flee the Black Death. And they would often leave loved ones behind who were already sick to fend for themselves. So non-Christians would head for the hills. You know where the Christians would go? Into the city. We're going to go in and we're going to take care of the sick. We're going to go in and bury the dying. Yes, many Christians lost their life, but they did so under the truth there is more to life than just what we're living here, and there is eternity in store for those who are faithful to Christ up to the end. And so they would move into the crisis. I'm encouraging us in this modern mental health plague crisis time, the church ought to be moving in. And so a group of these licensed counselors got together. We formed a board, and this summer we're going to be training the first group of lay counselors. And so here's what I want you to hear from me. If this is a giftedness that you have. In fact, the top five qualifications for being a lay counselor: spiritual maturity, psychological stability, love for others, the spiritual giftedness to do this, and life experience. If you have those and you sense, hey, this is something I'd really be interested in, I want you to drop me an email this week and we'll send you an application. Here's my, you have to apply to get into this lay counseling process. It's 60 hours of training. It's not a lightweight thing. 60 hours of your summer, supervised by a licensed counselor. And ultimately, the goal would be for our church to offer 10 hours of free counseling to any person in this church and any person in this community that needs it. Here's what I know. Scottsdale Bible Church, who we're modeling this ministry after, a good friend of mine is there, and he'll be doing our training here. They have about 40 lay counselors right now, and they still can't keep up with demand. They are 20 years down the road. We're just taking the first steps into this. But I believe this is something our church is called to do as an act of obedience to meet very practical needs in our society right here, right now, to warn those who are idle, to encourage the disheartened, to help the weak, to be patient with everyone. So here's a final story. The last living, The last living Titanic survivor. The last living Titanic survivor was Melvina Dean. She was a two-month-old baby when the Titanic went down in 1912. She lived all the way to 2009, and she died at the age of 97. By the way, this is kind of touching. At the end of her life, she couldn't afford her medical bills or her living expenses in the senior adult community she was living in. So Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, the stars of the Titanic movie, they paid for her medical bills. Isn't that nice? I'm going to drop Leonardo a note today. I need some bills taken care of. I saw the Titanic movie. You think that'd make me qualified for something, right? The last living Gibb brother. Does anybody remember the Bee Gees? God bless you if you do. Andy Gibb, of course, died in the 70s. Maurice died. Robin died. The last living Bee Gee today is Barry Gibb, lead singer of the Bee Gees. And the last living Golden Girl. You're wondering where I'm going with this, aren't you? Last living Golden Girl was actually Betty White, who died just a few years ago. You're the last living you. There will never be another person with your name, your identity, your giftedness on this planet. And so God has given you, the first and the very last you, he's given you some very clear commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. God is not a hobby. He is meant to be the centerpiece of our life. Oh, and while you're at it, here's the second part of that. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Treat other people exactly how you would want to be treated if you were in their shoes. And by the way, here's how we would want somebody to treat us. Warn those who are idle. Encourage the disheartened. Help the weak. Be patient with everyone. Let's stand together and let's pray. Thanks so much for listening to our weekly message podcast. At the end of each worship service on Sunday morning, I offer a simple blessing, and I offer that blessing to you today. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you, and may God grant you peace, both now and forever. Amen.